I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast.
3 out of 4 surveyed dentists seem to think so. The internet cried out for 2 more blowhards, and Will and myself answered the call. Each week we'll be joined by guests to discuss movies, television, popular culture, and anything else we fucking feel like talking about. How you doing, Will?
Well, I'm back in L.A.
Welcome back.
As anyone who listened to last week's show knew, I had to fly to New York. It was my 72 hours in New York. I had to go to a wedding on Long Island.
Wasn't that a movie with the Olsen twins?
A wedding on Long Island. It was. And the Olsen twins were at the wedding. No. They, and it was in a mansion, because every wedding on Long Island is in a mansion, because every wedding on Long Island is outrageously overdone.
All I know about Long Island is what I read in The Great Gatsby, so there's like West Egg and East Egg, and that's it.
We were in these areas. We were, that's where all the mansions
between the eggs.
Are. Yeah. And, it was good. It was, you know, I was dreading the trip and looking forward to that. It was a vegetarian wedding, though. So, I mean, I am vowing that when I have a wedding, I will have no vegetarian option because these fucking people didn't have a meat
option. It's going to be nothing but veal and...
I want an all-veal wedding.
Excellent. How about the bride can wear a meat dress like Lady Gaga?
Man, I got to meet the right woman then.
But, this is going to be tough. Now you're adding even more conditions.
It's going to be tough.
Well, thank you everyone for tuning in again. Want to make a quick correction at the top of the show. Last week, I said the name of the photographer was Alfred Newman. That is incorrect. It is Arnold Newman. Alfred Newman is the little freckle-faced freak from Mad Magazine.
That's Alfred E. Newman.
Yes. Arnold Newman is a brilliant portrait photographer. I will be putting up a link to his site. You can see some of the photos. It will, once again, they will blow your mind. They're unbelievable.
You know how many angry emails I received?
Dozens.
About that you're confusing Arnold for Alfred?
I actually did get one notification from
someone.
Did
you actually?
Yes, and someone called me out on it. I go, I know. I realized it almost immediately after I said it. Speaking of Facebook, we put up a little poll on there, so why don't you go and respond to that poll so myself and Will aren't the only ones that responded to the poll.
Yes.
So we had some questions as to which parts of the show you like the most. Not that we're going to change anything based on your opinion, but we're just curious.
We want to know. We want to know because this is your show, too.
No, it's not. It's our show.
And who is our sponsor for this week?
Well, this week, we all have opinions, whether they be political, cultural, or religious. We know that what we believe in is good, right, and true. Unfortunately, the internet is hell-bent on assaulting us with contrary, dissenting points of view. Well, no more. With iBlind, a new browser plugin, those days are over. Just install and configure the software, and you're ready to go. For a mere $29.95 a month, your personal web browsing experience will now be a mirror of the unique, informed individual you know yourself to be. Hate Huffington? Dread the Judge Report? Loathe Lindsay? Annoyed by nuance? Well, any links or traces of those offending sites will forever be banished from the web, and instead you will find yourself clicking through virtual Elysian fields of truth and righteousness. Don't let their uninformed ignorance upset you any longer, because in the end, it's not that they're wrong, it's just that you're right. www.iblind.com.
And you know what? It's a great product, and it's the reason why I didn't even know there was such a thing as the Republican Party.
Really?
Yes.
So what do you think all these people were doing?
I had no idea. Well, I just, you know.
Must have made The Daily Show a lot less funny.
I know. Now I get all the jokes.
Well.
Today on the show, we are going to be discussing music festivals, something me and Sean cannot possibly engage in. We also have an enemy of the podcast, which is an anti-Semitic enemy of the podcast this week. But now, Sean, we have a guest, and why don't you introduce
yes,
him?
Yes, our guest today is Kevin Ice.
Hello.
Hello, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Kevin is someone that I met through family, actually, but a new friend. Kevin is a transplant to Los Angeles, where he is working in comedy writing, and he is part of something called the Cleveland City Chuckle Squad.
Mm-hmm.
Would you care to elaborate on that?
Sure. I do a lot of comedy out here in L.A. since I moved out here about 1.5 years ago. And since I moved out here, I created 2 differently toned comedy troupes with my friends, the first being the one that you mentioned, Cleveland City Chuckle Squad, the second being this other one called Peach Fuzz. And but the Chuckle Squad is like definitely more of a viral campaign, whereas Peach Fuzz is just more silly for the sake of silly.
Gotcha.
And those are all short 30-second videos, whereas the Chuckle Squad is kind of more pop culture references that will get us hits.
More of a focus on making
exactly,
viral content.
A viral campaign.
Should I assume that, because you said you moved here to town, should I assume you've moved from Cleveland, or is this
No, Cleveland actually has nothing to do with anyone in the troupe, and there's no place called Cleveland City either. It's just the most random name that we could have thought of. And we thought the Chuckle Squad was a very, like, tongue-in-cheek, lame name that we could kind of...
I like... Yeah, it's silly. It's just like pure silliness.
Absolutely. No,
I don't know.
Connection.
I hear Chuckle Squad. I think clowns... It sounds terrifying, actually.
Yeah.
The Chuckle Squad sounds like a hit... But, a hit
see, when
troop
I hear,
of killer clowns.
When I hear Cleveland, I think it's terrifying or at least depressing. Yeah. But I like it because it's kind of like... It's one of those depressing cities and it's a comedy troupe.
Yeah,
it's kind of a juxtaposition.
Like, there's so many lame names of comedy clubs out there, like Yuck Yucks, the Ha Ha Laboratory, you know, Ha Ha Comedy Club. Whereas, like, we just thought the Chuckle Squad is... That it's so, so lame, whereas people either think, oh, these guys are going to be terrible, or people are like, oh, they're very, you know, like, they know what's up. They know how lame it is.
It's self-aware.
Yeah, the word for me, the word squad is so loaded, I can't hear the word squad without thinking, like, Death Squad or Goon Squad, so that's maybe why I'm going to look.
You're terrified of this comedy.
It's a little, I'm having some strong associations.
We're a dangerous group of people, so it's good
to
be
this group of people, did you meet them out here? These are people from before?
Well, let's see, there are, the Cleveland City Chuckle Squad is made up of myself, Jordan Van Dyna, Michael Clare, Kelly McDermott, Dan Peralt, and Spencer Wider.
Okay.
Now, those names might mean nothing to you right now, but...
Spencer, he does good work.
He does good work, yeah. Spencer was actually the only person out of those other five that I didn't know.
Okay.
Everyone else was, I went to college with, and they're all like a couple of years older than me, and we all did comedy in the same circuits. Like, I did a lot of stand-up where... My friend Dan was doing stand-up, and then I would always hang out with my pal Jordan, who is now my roommate.
Gotcha.
And through hanging out with him, I would hang out with people in his comedy troupe, Mike and Kelly. And once I came out here, we were like, hey, why aren't any of us making sketches? We should all be working on videos whenever we have free time. And we're like, hell yeah. So we created this team, and it was just supposed to be the four of us, and then... Jordan got his coworker Spencer to get a camera, and he was just filming all of our videos.
You needed a camera if
we
wanted to make
videos.
That was what I was holding together. Like, none of us.
Right.
What are we going to do?
Just wait till one of these guys gets their Yoko, and that'll be the Cleveland City Chuckle Squad.
Everyone, we're all like good buddies now. We all party, kick it together, and make comedy whenever we have free time.
Very cool.
We meet every Wednesday night and just. Everyone like pitches an idea. If we like the idea, script it by next Wednesday. And if the script is good, then we'll shoot it. If not, then we'll tell you you suck and you should never write again.
And now, is one person the director, one person the camera person, or do you all wear different hats depending on who's in the film and who needs to do what?
It really depends on who's in it and who wrote it. Because whoever writes it, whoever's idea it was, has like the most hold over it, where like they can kind of choose whatever they want. But when it comes to on set, like it's a huge collaborative process where everyone directs. Honestly, it sounds kind of messy, but we all kind of like step on each other's toes just in the right fashion. Where it's just like, all right, Kelly, that's a great point, but let's have you do this too. And he's like, yeah, you know, like that could work.
And it's great that you can find a group of people that you can work with that. Because
exactly.
That's got to be. I mean,
it's of course there are times when it's just like, all right, guys, let's have one person be the focus here.
Yeah.
You know, but like for example, we had that the Dark Knight birthday video, which we released last week, and
which we will put a link up to, and it is hilarious.
Thank you.
Tell them a little bit about the video.
That video is the joke is that everyone, it's a birthday party, it's a 9-year-old's birthday party, and the mom, instead of hiring a fun Batman mascot, she hires the Christopher Nolan Batman mascot, which is like a very dark and scary, and the adult.
The
Batman.
Darkest of all the
right.
Dark Knights.
So it's the contrast, it's the juxtaposition of the fun and loving birthday party with the Dark Knight
the
Batman.
The screaming, brooding
Batman. So basically we just had my friend Dan dressed up as Batman, and we got a real Batman suit for like $50, and that was the only thing that we spent money on, that and the pizza, and we had to get like... confetti and all those like party streamers.
All birthday stuff.
So I think overall we spent $50 renting the bat suit, $20 on streamers, and then $40, $50 on pizza for 15 little
kids.
And
you hear that, people, you have no excuses. They could slap together hilarious videos.
Everything else was entirely free. Like we got 15 children all through LA Casting, which is a free network, and a father drew two of his kids from San Diego. Just to be in this one sketch.
That's fantastic.
So for any pedophiles maybe listening, don't go to LA Casting.
But everyone else, it's a great resource.
If you need some free children, do they do like labor?
Oh yeah, I mean,
if
we
I want to move,
we had another 20 kids PA and like staff for us as well.
Well, The video was fantastic.
Thank you.
I watched it earlier
that.
Today, and I really thought it was
but
funny.
But that's just one of many. You have a very funny video about the Porsche love who was Adele's one-night stand that inspired the album.
Yeah,
Woody
yeah.
Wood.
That was a pretty funny. That was my roommate Jordan's idea. He plays the her boyfriend in that. Her okay. boyfriend, or the guy that she had a one-night stand with. And that was it's interesting how popular that video got. Within the first week, it was like, all right, cool. You know, like it got 1,000 hits, and we're like, oh, that's fun. But then, like within the second week, we just noticed that it was because the Grammys were Adele was blowing up.
It was
the perfect time. And we released it, I think, like a couple of days before the Grammys. So we knew that right after the Grammys and during the Grammys, actually, one of us tweeted at Judd Apatow the video, just randomly said, "Hey, Judd, here's a video, just a shot in the dark," and he retweeted it, and that got us like 50,000 hits in a matter of a day.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's the way you should be using. Like again, like you just said, everyone out there has no excuse because there's so many resources right
there's
now.
There's so many resources, and like even the silliest thing, like Twitter. I've seen so many people become successful from Twitter, which sounds so outlandish. I know this one girl that I used to work with at the Onion that she just started a twit. She started a twit, and. And what? So she just created this huge following because she would just toss out all these one-liners that were pretty clever and funny. And within like a year or so, she had like 10,000 followers. And then she got a phone call from like Jimmy Fallon, and she's now writing his monologues, which is.
And further news: the Wilshawn podcast will be reduced to 30-second viral videos and a Twitter feed. We're shutting this whole thing down.
Well, that's the thing with something like what we're doing. I mean, it kind of forces somebody to have to sit there. But that's in these videos, and I've watched a bunch of them: the Adele one, the Batman one, and it's great because the Batman one, it was like it was in and out. It was really funny. It didn't like overstay its welcome like some skits do. Like it just it hit you with the jokes, and then I really enjoyed it.
I'm really glad to hear that.
How many videos in total do you guys have out now?
I think we have 12 or 13.
Yeah, you have a YouTube channel. We're going to have the link up there.
Yeah, we can, and we also have like a really shitty website, thechucklesquad.com, right. Which we totally have to revamp. But,
that's shittier than our WilshawnPodcast.com, I can assure
it's,
you.
It's probably on par, maybe, if you're just shitty, if we're both talking shit here.
Because like you said, between things like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, it's like to have your own website becomes almost secondary because you're really going to get
exactly.
the people through.
Yeah, no, and that's such a good point because, I mean, like the only reason I still utilize Facebook, and I mean other than creeping on girls, is then
how
to
else do you meet them?
Is to just post all my videos and just to say, hey, check out our new video, and like for both Peach Fuzz and the Chuckle Squads, it's just the only way I can get my word out.
You also have your own Twitter feed where you also do one-liners and
right. I actually started to take Twitter more seriously ever since I started seeing my friends become successful from Twitter. I'm just like, God damn it! You know, like it's like right in your face where like you tell someone who's not in the industry like, oh, you should start taking Twitter seriously, and they're like, you're a moron. Yeah. But then as a comedian, like you really like the only people I follow on Twitter are other comedians because. I don't need to know if you're out getting coffee or if you're going to go catch a flight to like Omaha. I want to know a funny joke. I want to know a funny thought on what's happening.
That's exactly. I think Twitter is very useful if you're someone that already has a platform and you're trying to expand that platform. Mm-hmm. It's not so useful for, you know, schlubs with 10 followers.
Yeah. You know, entirely.
Who, like you said, are just saying like, I ate a bagel with cream cheese.
I checked in at the Des Moines airport. Like, great.
But some other people I know use it as like a means of getting news, and like they're like, yeah, Twitter is actually the best.
Well,
means
I use
for
it for news and comedians and public figures. That's it, and a handful of friends. But I'm going to get all that on Facebook because I'm already friends with them on Facebook.
Yeah.
So I don't need to see them on Twitter. For me, Twitter is where I go to get the funny.
Yeah.
You know.
Entirely.
Now you mentioned when you were talking that you wrote for The Onion.
Yeah.
So what was that? Because everybody loves The Onion. What was that like?
That was the coolest.
Peel away the layers.
To be able to contribute to them. I worked for the Onion News Network, which made their web videos, which was all their online content, not the editorial. And I started in 2008 as an intern. And then I was an intern in like the casting department, and I ended up becoming pretty tight with everyone there and the writers as well. Whereas the next – and that was over the summer, and I was going to school in Boston at the time. So, and I would come home to New York, and I would intern for The Onion. And then that next summer, I got back, and I just hit them up again being like, hey, can I come back and intern for you guys again? And they're like, yeah, do you want to – do you want to do something more in the means of writing? I was like, yeah, of course. And they gave me a writing internship, which basically means I was a writer's assistant because they just didn't want to pay anyone to be a writer's assistant there. So I was doing all the writer's assistant work. And through there, working for The Onion was a dream come true because I remember reading their articles since I was like eight or 9 years old. So to be able to intern for them was awesome. But then I started to they would say like, oh, feel free to contribute your own material. And
so they were just getting free content out of you.
Well, basically, as my job as the intern, as the writer's intern, was to sort all of the contributors' material. So I would put my own material in there as well, and then they would be like, oh, Kevin, that's good. Keep going. You know, whatever. I would see them go down the list and totally like ignore my ideas. But then week after week, like you would have to submit 20 ideas. You have to submit a headline with a description of where the sketch could go, and you would have to have at least 20 of them, and they would give you like, all right guys, in 4 months it's going to be July 4th, so we're going to want to have a July 4th sketch. So you would have to kind of predict what would be relevant in 4 months. So what I thought was particularly interesting was that I would start to slip my ideas in here, and then I would see that they would ignore them at first, and then they would highlight them, and then after a while they started to choose them, and then I got like $10 for all the one-liners and then $50 for like the sketches that they would choose, and that they would have their staff writers script out. So they would take the idea and then script them out, and
right, because it had to be filmed. They were film bits, so
right? Yeah, these were all the online video content that you see, not the articles, but yeah, this was super cool because I would sit in the writers' room with the 10 writers there, the staff writers. There were about 4 staff writers, and then they would have like 5 hardcore contributors that would come in every week and write scripts, and then they had like about 20 freelance contributing writers, which is what I was, a freelance contributing writer. And
it sounds like a great just like comedy writing boot camp.
It was incredible because I had this thing where like my internship there, once I got in the casting internship, I would read all the headlines and I would be like, I know I could do this. Yeah. So this way, so after my casting internship ended, I forced myself that entire year at least to write down at least one Onion headline and the description a day. So, but that was at least one a day, and I would sit at my desk, and there were some nights when I would get back super late, I had no time, and I would force out an idea that was super shitty, but then there were some days where I would sit down for like 2 hours and pen out like 10 ideas.
That's comedy writing is so crazy.
It's one of those things that you really have to force out. You can't just wait to be inspired, because that will never happen. I mean, granted, yeah, you'll see something that'll inspire you, and you'll have a good idea, but if you're a writer, you write, and like, you don't wait to be inspired, you just force it out, and then you realize later on, like, oh, that was a good idea, oh, that was terrible, yeah. I can't believe I spent that amount of time. But with The Onion, I would write every day. I would, and with that goal, saying, I know I'm going to be in the writer's room with them next year, in a year from now,
right,
because I have this connection. I'm going to be a writer's intern next year. I'm not asking to be paid. You know, I'm going to intern. And I was able to, and like by the time I got there, I had like 1,000 ideas that once I said, hey, listen, I'd like to contribute on a grander scale, they were like, oh, yeah. And then I would send them 50 ideas at a time, and it was just, statistically, they would choose more from the bigger batch.
I like what you said about the writing and the inspiration and people, because I know so many people are like, oh, I just feel so uninspired. If you're a writer, I've never really believed in writer's block for that reason, because anytime I've had writer's block, it's really been because just my writing's shitty right now. But you just keep writing and you get past and you just like you said, you just keep putting out
I do,
fucking ideas.
Just take out a yellow plaid and just, sometimes I'll just write words and then okay.
Yeah. Oh no, totally. And like I've written, I would say like 4 feature length films over like the course of my time like writing. And like when you're writing them, you're like, wow, this is so silly. I can't believe I'm spending time writing down these thoughts. Like this is the dumbest. If anyone were to read this outline I have right now, I would feel nothing but embarrassed. Like there's no grammar. Like it's all like I'm just getting the thought out there onto a paper. And then like what you're doing is like you're just building a foundation. And like the more you write, you're going to rewrite what you're writing. So rewriting is more writing than writing.
Yes.
So basically,
just get it out of your head first.
You have to shit on a white piece of paper and then turn that shit into something that people will read.
Well, I think that's what the ancient Romans did. And they would go through the shit and look for look for inspiration.
Yeah, that was how they wrote Gladiator, too.
Exactly. And I think that was about like 8 people who did shit out Gladiator.
Yeah.
Well, and John Logan.
Well, then. Speaking of, you know what? I feel like that's almost a good. I know we usually go right into the topics, but talking about writers and stuff like that might be a good segue into immediately the enemy, because we know about the enemy of the podcast this week. One of the great shit writers in Hollywood, Joe Estrenhaus, who
wrote such classics as Basic Instinct, Starship? No.
Anything else with Sharon Stone's vagina? Yeah.
Sliver?
Again, a series of Sharon Stone vagina movies. Yeah. Yes, that's what... He made his money in vagina. And Mel Gibson, who...
Love him.
How could you not?
Well, yeah. For anyone who doesn't know, Joe Esterhaz, who is, discovered that his grandfather was a Nazi war criminal, left Hollywood after a little while, left Hollywood, got religious, decided to come back to write the Judah Maccabee story, the story of Hanukkah that Mel Gibson was going to direct.
So
the two of them have been partnered up for the last 2 years working on this script.
And Mel Gibson's been trying to get back in the good graces of Hollywood.
Jews.
Yeah.
And the Jews, which is why he's like, he's going to take on the biggest Jew movie
which
of all.
Which made me interested in the Maccabee movie, because I wanted to see if, like, is this the two of them spending 2 years on the biggest anti-Semitic film of all time? Or
the most pro-Semitic film of all time.
Or is it them really trying to confuse everyone?
Well, for those of you that don't know or aren't up
to... Are we going to do Sean, before we finish this, are we going to get into Sean's Jewish corner? Do you want to do Jewish history corner?
Yeah, why don't
tell us who the Maccabees
were. Well, the Maccabees, for the few of you who don't know, were a sect of traditionalist Jews that were living in Israel in about the 160s BC when the country was being Hellenized under the Seleucid Empire. And there were two factions of Jews. There were those that lived in Jerusalem, the city dwellers, who were Hellenized and were tight with the king Antiochus Epiphanes IV.
This sounds like a great film.
Yes,
by the way.
And then there were the people in the countryside who were the more traditional Jews, and there was essentially a civil war between these two factions of Jews, and the Syrian king, the Seleucid king, backed up the Hellenized city Jews, and the country Jews had to engage in years of guerrilla warfare tactics in very violent struggles to overthrow the Hellenized Jews and the Seleucid forces that have taken control.
So it's a war movie.
It's a war movie, yes.
Is that what we're
getting at? Jew versus Jew.
Okay, well, here's the thing. Mel Gibson could direct the hell out of war. We've seen Braveheart. Fucking great. Guess what? We're never going to see this Maccabee movie now. Because Mel Gibson went crazy, fucking crazy again. And here's what frustrates me. There's this latest rant that Joe Esterhaus recorded of Mel Gibson, like secretly. Secretly recorded this thing.
You'd think you wouldn't do that to your coworker.
You would think, unless you're
I think after you've been doing it for listening to this nut job
that's
for
true.
2 years,
that's a good point.
I need,
like,
no
I
one
need the
will
world to recognize
yes,
what I'm dealing
no
with.
No one believe me if they don't know what I'm
if
listening to.
If it's a crazy anti-Semite, and this is why, Mel Gibson, you're the enemy of the podcast this week. Fuck you. And I'll tell you why, because I love your fucking movies. I love fucking Mad Max, and I love Braveheart, and
Lethal Weapon.
I love the Lethal Weapon. Riggs is the best.
What Women Want?
What Women Want.
Number one in my
He
book
knew
right
what
there.
Women
the
wanted.
The Beaver.
The Beaver. He knew. But the thing is, he knew what beavers wanted.
The Man Without a Face.
But the problem is, I want to like you. I want to like your movies. And then you say something anti-Semitic. And then you say you're going to murder your wife. And then I thought we were past all this again. And I'm like, okay, we can move on and have a good movie. But no, you fucked up your Maccabee movie because you went crazy, screaming, going nuts.
What did Mel Gibson go crazy over?
He went, well...
It was hungry, right? Wasn't he hungry?
He was very hungry. I have the transcript of the Mel Gibson, of the conversation he had with Joe Esterhaus. Said this to Joe Esterhaus's family, mind you. And Randall Wallace was there, too. It was another screenwriter. What was he doing there? I don't
know. So at least he was yelling at Nazi blood.
Exactly.
Okay.
So he was. So it makes it a little better. Is it less anti-Semitic? Nothing anti-Semitic here.
Yeah,
but
just crazy.
Here is what Mel Gibson had to say to Joe Esterhaus about how he hadn't, I guess, finished the draft of the Maccabee script. Screaming, "Why don't I have a first draft of the Maccabees? What the fuck have you been doing? I'll type it." Mumble inaudible. "It's her." Mumble inaudible. "I go to work. You're getting paid. I'm not shit. I am earning money for a filthy little cocksucker who takes advantage of me, just like every motherfucker, so hurry the fuck up. Throwing things, knocking down a totem pole." So Mel,
there's a totem pole
Mel
nearby?
Owns a totem pole. "Fucking God. Who wants to eat? Who the fuck wants to eat? Go have something to eat. Hurrah! Fuck, 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 fucking hate, fucking cunt, cocksucker, whore, fuck." And then he gets in his car and drives away.
I just had a great vision hearing you read that makes a perfect one-man show. That's all I need to hear.
This is what the thing. I want the new show. Will Link reads the rants of Mel Gibson. Yeah. We have so many. Sugar tits. Like, yeah, the Jews caused all the wars.
I smell another viral video.
I just don't understand how someone can do this so frequently. Like, it's every 4 months we hear another Mel Gibson
rant. And
it's
one thing to hear the words. You have to hear it because this man sounds like a maniac.
These are the only ones that we're catching recorded, you know? Like, I'm sure there are other ones that are recorded that are, like, even better.
People that work with him, oh, he's been nothing. I worked with him for 20 years. He's never raised his voice. He's been nothing but a gentleman. Bullshit.
Yeah,
either you're all suffering from collective amnesia, or you're covering up something massive, or this man is seriously bipolar schizophrenic.
It's very refreshing to have someone record that and have the world hear it, because we're all on the same page at this point.
But it's so, I mean, let's face it, the man does know how to make a good movie. And that's what's so upsetting. I mean, didn't you guys love the Mad Max films?
I can't enjoy them now. You know, it's strange. It's strange. I can't, and this might be because I'm Jewish, but also because, like, I just can't enjoy anything Mel Gibson makes now because I'll always have that conscious thought. But then again, like, I think in the back of my head, I forgave Kramer. You know, like, why am I more prone to forgive Kramer?
You're not black.
Exactly. But why? But I think I don't
because
think
I feel
that,
like Mel
that's
Gibson
not fair.
Means,
why?
I think
why
Mel Gibson means it. It's in his heart. I refused to. When Passion of Christ came out, I refused to pay to go see it. I waited until it came out on DVD. I had still been living in my parents' house at this time.
I bought the DVD, though.
No, my parents were not. We
bought 20 copies of the DVD
to make up for
and distribute them to all the Jews. Yeah.
We didn't rent the movie. We borrowed it from someone. My parents were out of town. I had a female friend come over. We got a bottle of vodka, and it was about noon on a Sunday afternoon, and we just started drinking vodka while watching Passion of the Christ. My brother comes home about an hour and 45 minutes later. We are dead drunk on the couch in the middle of a Sunday, and there's just people whipping the shit out of Jesus as he's carrying a cross. My brother sizes up the scene, looks at us, goes, "What the fuck is going on here?" Like, the Passion of the Christ.
I remember I saw Passion of the Christ when I was like 12 years old in camp.
Excellent.
My friend got it from his older Jeep camp. A little extra jive at him. My friend's brother brought it to him on visiting day or something, like a burnt copy of it, and then we like snuck it into one of the camp rooms and we watched it and we were like, oh, we're watching the Passion of the Christ in a Jewish sleepaway camp. We are badass.
You're defying all the rules.
Yeah, and we still managed to have a good time.
Well, what you said about Kramer is interesting because also, and we talked about this on other enemies of the podcast, like Chris Brown. Fuck you, Chris Brown.
You're still an enemy.
We're still mad at you.
Yeah, he's
but
a
it's
jerk.
It's a repeat offender thing. He did that once. There was no record of him ever doing anything like that before.
That might be why everyone is more prone. And if you got Larry David on your side,
it came off
if
as
Larry
a piece
David
of stand-up.
Is good friends with Mel Gibson, I think I would be okay with Mel Gibson.
But you know what? That's what we need. Larry David is the only one. Mel Gibson should go on Curb as himself and say something anti-Semitic to Larry.
Larry's
like, what? No good.
And then America will love him again. No problem.
Now, I can still watch a Mel Gibson movie just fine. And I guess, is it because I'm not Jewish and I only pretend to be Jewish? Is that the case, I guess?
We're silently judging you.
Sean,
I think I'm
going to
go. I don't belong here anymore.
I thought
I was surrounded by Jews.
I'm out.
But, I mean, let's say he made another movie that was like his long talk about Viking movie or something, and it was getting critical acclaim, and they say it's great. Would you go see it?
No, I'd buy tickets to something else. I'd sneak in.
But you'd still see it.
I would see it, but I wouldn't give any financial satisfaction.
But that's still kind of bullshit.
Why? I'm not giving him any money.
But you're still going to see what his product.
But you're not a part of the statistics.
I'm not part of statistics. Exactly. I'm not contributing to his success. And come on, Vikings. They're fucking awesome.
I gotta see a Viking movie.
Hitler
can make a Viking movie. I'll pay to see it. I love Vikings.
I've always wanted to see a Viking movie. And then fuck you again, Mel Gibson, because you go crazy, you alienate everyone, and now I'm never going to see this fucking Viking movie.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I want a Viking movie,
Eric the Viking. The quintessential Viking
Did
movie.
You ever see The Vikings with Kirk Douglas and
was
Tony
Ringo
Curtis?
Star in that?
And, what was that?
What am I thinking about a Ringo Starr movie? Caveman.
No, you're thinking of Caveman. This was Kirk Douglas and Tony Curtis and Ernest Borgnine playing Kirk Douglas's father, which doesn't make any sense. But it was a great movie from the 50s. Check it out.
Is that the Will's Pick of the Week?
Will's Pick of the Week is 1958, The Vikings.
All right, I think we should move on here.
I think we should move on, too.
This past weekend and the weekend before that was the Coachella Music Festival out in the Inland Empire, about 90 minutes east of Los Angeles. Have you ever been to Coachella or Burning Man or any of these Bonnaroos?
I went to Bonnaroo twice.
Okay.
And I think I was at another festival. I probably wouldn't remember. Okay. I was. But I was at Bonnaroo when I was like when I was 18 after high school, and then I went when I was 19 the following year. And yeah, they're a wild time. I can't imagine at an older age like someone in his mid-20s going again. And,
or his early 30s.
But like Coachella, I've had a lot of friends go to Coachella these past 2 weekends. Like a ton of my friends went, and I just don't understand. Like, aren't we over it? Like, aren't we tired?
See, for me, it's,
I can't watch music for 10 hours a day.
It's not even watching the music. For me, I start thinking about the amount of people and the heat and the logistics and the sweat and the bodies.
That was the worst.
And I freak out. The only way I would go to Coachella is if someone said, come to our house, get in the car, you can sleep for the whole way there, we have all the food, all the water,
hotel.
All the alcohol, at hotel, you don't need to do a goddamn thing,
yeah.
Here's your passes, we will hand-hold you through the entire thing, and then we will take you home. And yeah. Better yet, maybe a helicopter will take me there and back.
That's even better. In fact, I want to watch the whole thing from a helicopter.
Outside of that,
yeah.
I cannot imagine going, and people fucking yeah. love this.
It's strange to me, it really is, it blows my mind, but I mean, it's weird for me to say it's strange because I went twice, but it's to something of the similar sense on the East Coast. Bonnaroo is the East Coast Coachella. Basically.
Yeah, it's in Tennessee in the dead of the summer.
But I mean, Coachella seems to be like way bigger now. Like it's
well,
like
that's
it's,
exactly. So every year Coachella was this. The one reason I would possibly consider going is because it's a unique experience.
Yeah,
it's a communal experience of music,
and it's less festival now. It's more of like iconic. It's like very pop culture.
Well,
you know?
This
is it
year,
too much of the in thing now. I gotta go. To
well,
Coachella.
This year for the first year ever, they decided they were going to be doing 2 weekends of Coachella. Which is just insane because I have friends that went, and I spoke to them just yesterday. They went both weekends, and you would think weekend one they had the hologram Tupac, and every year there's always something special.
Yeah.
And I remember when Jay-Z did Forever Young and Beyonce came out on stage, and I watched the videos of this, and it just seemed like a very moment.
Did they have something special at the end of the second week of Coachella?
No, it was the identical
show.
They're
like waiting for Tupac.
It was the exact same. You thought Biggie was a holograph. Biggie was a
hologram. Right, yeah. They have Tupac hologram
same
again?
Hologram exact show. Mozart this
they,
time.
Even to the same songs, the same banter. My friends who were there said it was identical, which is like having Woodstock and then going, all right, everyone, come back next week and we're doing this again.
Yeah. But the difference is Woodstock meant something and this is just a concert.
I feel like
the commercialism
Woodstock was
of...
to save the world, which it did. And Coachella is saving the world as well. So,
well,
you know,
I feel
Hologram
like Coachella,
Tupac is
I mean,
kind
was,
of what
let
we
me,
need.
Wait, can yeah. we talk about Hologram Tupac? Because people don't know, and I don't know how you don't, but maybe you don't. There's at
fuck
the
you
end
for
of
that
Coachella, there was a hologram of Tupac.
Interacting with Snoop Dogg and bantering.
Yeah, that was huge. Like next day, everyone's status, everyone's this, everyone's that
video,
was all
if you haven't
about...
seen it on YouTube, put in Hologram Tupac. And it was not – they didn't take concert footage. They actually CGI'd him from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And they recreated his voice and they also had a voice impersonator fill in that he said, you know, what's up Coachella? Well, he was dead before Coachella ever happened. So,
yeah,
thank
was,
God he didn't live.
That was actually
to
something that my friend Dan in the Chuckle Squad brought up immediately. It was that like that Monday. He sent us all an email where it was like, guys, listen, Hologram Tupac is super in right now. Let's make a sketch about what's it called? Hologram
Buddy
Tupac dying. And the only way we would do it is because he has a connect to Snoop Dogg, so he would be like the only way that would make it funny is if we had the celebrity pull and have Snoop Dogg commenting on, like basically
when
the same exact comments that they made when Tupac died just now when Hologram Tupac died and how they got to rekindle their relationship but only for however long.
It's like when Jesus came back.
But
three
that
days.
Was gonna take way too much.
But
time
you got that's so good.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Someone's gonna do that.
Someone's gonna do it.
Now
it's
that it's out
that's
the
more
internet.
That's more prone for like SNL. Like they quickly pick up that you know to do. But
or they
I mean,
have the resources to pull it off.
Yeah, it was just something that like the only way we as like the Chuckle Squad, so like an underground super Z-list like comedy troupe, like the only way that would make that like get views is at and because everyone's making Tupac jokes is if we had the Snoop Dogg pull.
Right.
And
Jay,
that just seemed
Jay
a little.
Jay Farrow, if you're listening.
Yeah.
This could be your big skit. This could be your biggest SNL skit.
Forget Denzel Washington. Forget all your Will Smith. You
but
can be.
I hope they kill that hologram because it's going on tour. And I don't like
Are you serious?
Is, yeah, the hologram
we're
is going
five,
on
you,
tour.
We're 5 minutes away from going to Vegas and
Where's
seeing
the, money
the
going?
Beatles. Tupac's mama.
Yeah, that's true. We're going to see the Beatles performing
again. Any act, you know, you're going to be able to go see Frank Sinatra jamming with the Beatles and Jerry Garcia.
I saw this great, I think this was like a couple of days after, it was the Coachella lineup, but it was next year's Coachella lineup, and it was all hologram, like hologram Mozart, hologram, every famous Mozart singer that died. And it was just the exact same setup and like that they had the lineup this year, just with hologram.
You ever wanted to see a Castrato perform? Well, now you can at hologram music festivals.
Well, let me ask you this. Would you ever go to a hologram show?
No, fuck that.
Honestly, I would be a little freaked out. I would feel comfortable.
If you were doing enough drugs.
Oh, yeah, probably. Because it would be more... Actually, that would freak me out even more. I don't think I'd be able to handle that.
I don't want to see hologram like Kurt Cobain playing with Dave Grohl. Old Dave Grohl. Hologram Kurt Cobain. I mean, this is too...
Do you think Tupac... I mean, granted, his mom released a statement saying, oh, this is so great. I love seeing my son perform for crowds.
It's not your son. It's computer.
But do you think Tupac, you know, someone with his mentality and his style and like his... in like his very individuality, like his approach towards the mainstream. Do you think someone like him would have wanted a hologram?
Well, Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg signed off.
I'm going to tell you why. Yes, he just didn't live long enough to sell out. You go along long enough, you're going to sell out. That's all it was. We revere Tupac only because he died. Yeah. I mean, he was good, but we revere him.
It was only a matter of time before Smells Like Teen Spirit would be used to sell Cadillacs and erectile dysfunction drugs.
No, that's true. More
or
time.
Deodorant.
If you have more time to be alive, you're going to sell out. Sell out.
That would be
great. I wish we're famous enough and live long enough that we can get to the point where we're gladly selling out.
I hope that we have holograms one day doing this podcast.
Well, you know, once I kick the bucket, Holograph Sean will just be, you know, phoning it in.
I'll tell you what, if I die tragically, but what's bring a hologram Will on to, I know what you're going to get.
What's the line of holograms? Like, we have hologram artists, but like, what about, what if we have sex holograms or I want my grandfather back, you know, like grandfather holograms. Like, what is the line here? Why is it okay for a rapper to be hologram, then why no one else? Like,
well,
or maybe it is okay for other people.
Hologram.
It's just so new to everyone.
Hologram.
Let's bring back, you know who I want to vote for president next year or this year? Hologram Abe Lincoln. Bring hologram Abe Lincoln
I want hologram Rutherford B. Hayes.
Let me tell you what. Great president. No, but let me tell you what. You mentioned having sex with holograms, and I have long talked about how we're getting to the point, and this is going to be a real problem, that we're going to be having sex with robots. And that
like AI. I think that's already happened.
But I mean, like, it's going to be like you can buy the Scarlett Jo bot or the Megan Fox bot.
Not that I'm a professional on this topic or anything, but I was watching the show called Taboo on Nat Geo, and the segment was about, have you ever seen the movie Lars and the Real Girl?
Yes.
It's about a guy that develops a relationship with a sex doll, but like a real, like, boyfriend, girlfriend, almost a husband and wife relationship. And this segment of Taboo, it's called Taboo, it's because it's about all these strange topics that you wouldn't think exist. But it was about a guy who legitimately had a very strong bond with his sex doll. And he would talk about how he would take it out to eat and take it to restaurants and he would actually order it food. And you saw them. They documented this. We are at that point where it's just a matter of time before they just plaster Scarlett Johansson's face on that one of those models, which I'm sure they probably already have.
There's some guy in Japan who's fucking a Scarlett Jo bot right now. But you know what's – because eventually the robots will be able to just – you can interact with them like normal. And I swear to God, if I'm not in a relationship by the time this happens, I'm never going to be. So I got to meet somebody soon because otherwise I'm going to spend my old age fucking a young Scarlett Jo bot, which as I say it – doesn't sound like an awful thing.
How do you know there's not going to be some fan of the podcast that's going to get herself a Will Link bot?
I'll tell you what. She could have the real thing. Anyone, anytime. That's my motto. That should not be my motto. I want to bring up one more.
Riddled with herpes and AIDS a few years from now.
Yes, well, that's what's going to happen. This podcast is going to... And I always have that AIDS anxiety anyway, which this week's episode of Girls did not help with. But let's
I saw that. That was
So let's. I want to get to one more topic, and it's We've talked about Hunger Games a lot here on the show because I happen to enjoy the books, and we both, I think, enjoyed the movie. And Gary Ross is out as director for the next, and Francis Lawrence is in. Francis Lawrence, who directed Water for Elephants.
My old teacher, actually, from Emerson, wrote Water for Elephants. He's Richard the Gravenese. He
was
nominated for an Oscar for writing The Fisher King. He's also written and directed a ton of stuff.
Yes.
He worked on Water for Elephants with Lawrence, and that was I remember him saying it was great to work with him. So I can only imagine him doing on Hunger Games too.
Is he going to be working with him on it?
I don't know. I don't know if Richard is necessarily going to be writing the script.
The script's already done.
The script's
pretty ready to go. They are already. I happen to know someone who's very close to Francis Lawrence, and I've gotten a little bit of an inside scoop, and he's basically deep in pre-production already.
Yeah.
And is very excited because they need to start filming like first week of August to hit their deadline. So he, as soon as the ink was wet, he started pulling his team together and was ready to go.
It's Catching Fire is a little bit more, at least the second half of the book is a little more visually complex than say the Hunger Games was. Now, does Francis Lawrence, you think, has he
Visual... He did pulled off I Am Legend constantly. Francis Lawrence has directed every great music video you have ever seen in your entire life.
And if
he
you
did
know...
most of Lady Gaga videos.
Oh, okay.
He's done. The way he works is he comes up with the concept. He meets with Gaga and tells Gaga, this is what we're doing.
Well, if you notice, his past couple of films were adapted from books.
Yeah.
So he's kind of taken that route. And I remember Richard, like, when I was in class with him, he started writing. This was in 2007. No, this was 08 or 09. I don't remember exactly. But he was, I remember him mentioning that he just started, he was reading the book and he was adapting it into the script at the time. And it's interesting to see how certain writers and directors stick with that. You know, like, yeah, The Fisher King was an original script, but he kind of stuck with adaptations after that. And that's, you kind of see Lawrence doing the same
thing.
Well,
also Francis Lawrence was the creative force and executive producer and directed the first few episodes of Kings, the NBC series that only sadly had only one aborted season. Was phenomenal.
And
was
sadly only had one fan, and it was you.
Oh, so good. It was a modern day retelling of the King David story in a essentially a version of modern day New York. I'm sorry. New York City.
Sean died, by the way. Yeah. This was the final fight. He's going to be the hologram, not me.
Moving on. This has been a rough episode.
There's been some fits and starts to it. But
car alarm's going off.
Yeah.
Everything's fallen apart this week on Will Sean Podcast.
Excellent. Speaking of which, next week?
I guess it's about that time.
It's about that time.
I know.
Peace, fuckers. It's been fun.
Time flies. Well, listen.
Later, bitches. I'm out.
Honestly, thank you for coming on.
Oh, guys, it was definitely a pleasure to be here.
Your videos are hysterical.
We're going to post a link
up on our Facebook page so you could check them all out. They'll be up. You should have, if you're a good listener, you will have already watched them by the time you listen to this episode.
Give a rundown quickly where everyone can find your content.
My content is over, you can check out www.thechucklesquad.com or another website I have is www.peachfuzzcomputerwebsite.com and you can find me on Twitter at kbombmcdougs, which you won't know how to spell, so...
Would you like to spell it for us?
Sure. KBOMMCDOOGS. K-Bomb McDougs.
And speaking of your thought that what you said earlier about having to put out a joke or two every day, if you follow him on Twitter, that's exactly what you will get. You will get Kevin's punched in face as a avatar and 2 to 3 really funny jokes every day.
Yeah. Try to get those out as much as possible.
Nice.
Keeps you sharp.
Sean, would you like to do your plugs, your personal plugs?
Yes, I am Twitter, the Sean David. I also have my book on Amazon, Amazon Kindle, Triumvirs, Triumvirs. And I also have my Facebook page, Sean David. So didn't see any additional likes from last week, so get on that.
Well, they're sending you a message.
Fuckers.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TheRealWillLink, and you can listen to me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on The Larry Minetti Show, reviewing movies and shit. And you can listen to that at crntalk.com. And we do have a bunch of big episodes coming up.
We do.
Next week we are doing our summer movie preview. So we're going to run down the movies and tell you...
Big time.
Yeah.
We're going to tell you everything that looks shitty...
You're going to listen to us. Yes. You're going to like it.
We're going to judge in advance an entire 3 months of a blockbuster fare.
But you know what? The summer is, 9 times out of 10, it's easy to judge. Because, like, Battleship, shit. Prometheus, good. It's summer is very black and white. It's very simple.
So if you're a simple person, tune in next week.
And we're going to have our screenwriter buddy of ours, Freddie Boutros.
He's a super fan, super fanboy.
He's a big, yeah, he loves a lot of comic book movies and stuff like that, so we're going to have him on discussing it with it. And then the week after that, ladies and gentlemen,
really big show.
Really big show. We're going to have, from the hit ABC television series Revenge, we're going to have Nick Wexler. He plays Jack Porter, the hottie bartender, on the show. So you'll be wanting to listen to that.
That is going to be an excellent episode. Nick doesn't talk too much about himself, so this should be very interesting.
So we're going to try to bring it out of him here on this shitty podcast.
It's going to happen.
So, once again, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
And,
yeah, I think we're
super fun.
Super fun. We're finished.
We're finished.